the unauthorized area, and that utilize and wasteful expenditure for the Department of Communications. Thank you. And you introduce everyone that is with you, even for someone with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. At this stage, I'm alone. The colleagues that actually dealt with the communication portfolio, they also have to do a briefing to scope up, so they will join us later, but I will do the presentation, and if there's any questions which I cannot answer, then they will make the presentation to answer those questions. The way that we've presented the slide combines the three entities, Department of Public Works, Property Management Trading Entity, which is an entity associated with the Department of Public Works, and the Department of Communications. So if you want me to just focus on communications, I can quickly go through the slides and just focus on the part which deals with communications. That it's structured like that in any case. I will then start off with communications. I'll just give you a brief background on the audit opinion overall. It was a qualified audit opinion, and it was only qualified with regard to irregular expenditure. And the reason why it was qualified is because the auditors could not get assurance that the irregular expenditure disclosed in the financial statements is complete. So the problem that we had was that the amount disclosed in the financial statement, I think it's about 24 million rand, we could not get certainty that that amount is indeed complete. So the department should have systems and processes in place to first of all ensure itself completeness, and then for us to be able to verify the completeness. Just for completeness sake, there was an emphasis of matter on basis of accounting. That's a standard emphasis of matter for all national and provincial departments, just highlighting the specific basis of accounting which is used, which is the modified basis of accounting. Then irregular expenditure was also just emphasized, and then there was an emphasis on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There was 54,000 rands of fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred due to interest being paid on overdue accounts and some trips that had to be cancelled. So if we look at the specific amount, you will see there on the right hand side that for 08-09 it was 5 million rand of irregular expenditure, and for 19 it was 24 million rand. The 24 million rand is made up of two amounts, 8 million, which directly relates to the current year, and the rest is which has been identified in the current year but relates to the previous years. If we look at the reasons for the irregular expenditure, it's the same, incidentally, for all the entities that we are dealing with today. And it says the department did not follow proper procurement processes for all procurement, which resulted in irregular expenditure, not having adequate systems and procedures in place to identify and record all irregular expenditure. In terms of the PFMA, it's the responsibility of an entity to identify all irregular expenditure. Therefore, we had to qualify on the completeness of irregular expenditure disclosed in the financial statements, and that goes for all three entities. Our conclusion is also that these qualifications are as a result of a lack of oversight responsibility by leadership over reporting on compliance with laws and regulations. There were no unauthorized expenditure for the Department of Communications, and 54,000 fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And of which 51,000 is awaiting write-off. We have included in the slide just the other issues which were covered in the audit report, but my understanding is that for the purposes of today's meeting, the focus is on fruitless and wasteful, irregular and unauthorized. So unless you want me to go through the rest of the slides, I will stop there for now.
Thank you, Mr. Van Vieren. Honorable members, I was thinking that maybe after his presentation, the department should present, and then we'll ask the question to him and also to the department. Are we agreeing on that? Honorable Drea?
Madam Chair, yes, we can ask questions afterwards, but there's something for clarity right now, I wonder, and it's just something I want to point out. We had the presentation with the information coming out of this book that was distributed to us earlier this week, and that's very good, and I'm thankful for that, that rich in information. But I just want to point out that there's gaps in the pages in this book. I don't know if you're aware of that. In mine, it's page 4 and then suddenly page 29. So the slide there on page 5 and the subsequent pages are missing from this book. Have you seen this or not aware of that? And if we could then have the missing pages, this information is very valuable to us. The missing page is 5 to 28, not in this book. And then just for clarity, for clarification, if you could just elaborate a little or tell us, I see on page...
Honorable Drea, can... Yes, we do accept that the pages are missing. They'll correct the pages. But for clarity, can we do it after the Department of Public of Communication had presented? Because we'll be engaging with the Auditor General and the Department of Communication. I think that is what we agreed on. Okay, thank you. Department of Communications, Acting DG, Dr. Harold Weso.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Our purpose for being here today is to brief the Portfolio Committee on the irregular, unauthorised, fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by the Department of Communications during 2009-2010 financial year. Before we go into the detail, I think Ms. Van Vieren alluded to that. I think it's important if it just gives a little bit of background in detail. During the financial year 2009-2010, the Auditor General has identified 24.2 million rand of irregular expenditure, of which 15.7 million was incurred in prior years. The balance of 8.5 million was incurred during 2009-2010 financial years. Below, what we will discuss is a detailed breakdown of amounts, service providers involved, the years in which they were incurred, and the circumstances under which the transactions occurred, including the corrective measures taken by the department to prevent recurrence. Now, we will take you through a few slides indicating the service providers involved, the amounts, the year, the reason and also the corrective measures taken, and we will also conclude with a slide or two regarding corrective measures. Now, the first service provider involved is Distinctive Choice and the irregular expenditure to the amount of 15.3 million over the period 2006-2008. Now, a travel agency, Distinctive Choice, was appointed without following procedures to render travel and accommodation to the office of the former leadership of the department. A disciplinary process concerning officials who were involved in this matter is currently underway. The matter is before the courts. Legal advice is being sought with respect to officials who have left the department to determine the possibility of recovery. The second service provider is Uniglobe. The amount, 397,000 Rand in 2008. This is a travel agency who was procedurally appointed to render travel and accommodation services to the department. However, the agency was used by officials in a department to procure goods and services outside its scope of work. The tender committee has recommended that precaution letters be issued to officials who were involved, and this process has commenced, and precautionary letters will vary from final warnings to verbal warnings, written warnings, and so forth. Then the third service provider involved is Draft FCB, an amount of 446,000 Rand is involved in the year 2009-10. Now, this service provider was again procedurally appointed to render communication and marketing related services for broadcasting digital migration. However, the service provider was requested to place an advert paying tribute to the late minister, contrary to its scope of work. Corrective measure there is that an investigation was conducted and concluded. Disciplinary action has been instituted against officials who were involved, and the matter is before the courts. Then there are various service providers involved for the amount of 1.1 million rand. In this case, no procurement processes followed in the acquisition of various goods and services below the rand value of 200,000 rand. No prior approval was obtained before purchasing. Now, the tender committee has recommended that, again, precaution letters be issued to officials who were involved, and this process has commenced. The next service provider involved is Intelligent Edge, to the amount of 2.4 million plus minus. Now, this service provider was appointed to render training to community radio stations without following procurement procedures. A former employee responsible for this transaction has since left the department. However, a legal opinion is being solicited in this regard to determine the possibility of recovery. The last case is, again, distinctive choice, and I will ask my colleague on my right-hand side, Mr. Sam Vilakasi, the Acting DDG for Finance and Enterprise Development, to give some detail here, to the amount of 4.5 million. Now, again, this is a travel agency who was appointed without following procurement procedures to render travel and accommodation to the officers of the former leadership of the department. Now, a disciplinary process concerning officials who were involved in this matter is currently underway. The matter is before the courts. Legal advice is being sought with respect to officials who have left the department to determine the possibility again of recovery. That amounts to a total of 8.5 million rand. The rest regarding fruitless and wasteful expenditure is as follows. In the case of Telkom, an amount of 50,000 Rand, this relates to interest on late payment due to an investigation related to a DOC line. It was intercepted by a syndicate and made illegal calls. Now, Telkom has since reversed this amount to the department, so that has been dealt with. Flights, 1,000 Rand. Cancellation of air tickets beyond the control of the individuals involved. The transaction was condoned and written off. Duplicate payments, and Mr. Vilakasi can again provide a detail there, to the amount of 21,000 Rand. Two service providers were paid for the same service. The transaction is not yet condoned. The matter is with the state attorneys for their advice. Then lastly, visa fees, 2,000 rand. Payments for visas for trips that did not take place due to reasons beyond the official's control. And that was condoned and written off. Now, honourable members, just to summarise the corrective measures undertaken by the department at this point in time. In response to non-compliance with supply chain management regulations, as highlighted by the Auditor General, appropriate measures and key controls have been adopted and immediately implemented by the department as follows. Procurement is strictly done in line with the supply chain management policy. Sourcing of goods and services up to 200,000 rand has been centralized, a function which was previously left to individual business units and led to instances of non-compliance. It must be emphasized this is a temporary measure in order to understand the environment and to introduce corrective measures more systematically. Next, the evaluation of all tenders is done in line with the PPPFA regulations. All responsibility managers have been trained on supply chain management and PFMA matters. It is also now a requirement that managers must undergo this training prior to appointment as responsibility managers. And I think that will have a very positive impact on the way going forward. Then number six there, we have now again established a fully functional internal audit unit at the level of chief director. It's fully functional and has concluded audits of critical areas such as supply chain and finance and recommended areas for improvements. The audit committee is in place and functional as I've indicated. Also, all finance policies in the department have been reviewed to ensure that compliance is strengthened. Regular meetings are held with the accounting officer to assess the state of compliance in the department and to identify areas that need further improvement. The departmental bid adjudication committee is now also fully constituted and functional. And what is very important to mention here is that alternate members of the committee have now been appointed to ensure that there is rotation and also a deepening of the expertise in a department as far as bid adjudication is concerned. And then lastly, disciplinary processes have been instituted against officials who have transgressed the law. These matters are at different stages in terms of progress. And then a few concluding remarks, Honourable Chairperson. The Department of Communications takes the issues of compliance with the PFMA and the triple PFA and regulations very, very serious. The leadership of the department has adopted zero tolerance against non-compliance by ensuring that key internal controls are fully in place to prevent recurrence. Compliance in the department has significantly improved, and a culture of compliance is beginning to emerge. The leadership of the department has further adopted a hands-on approach to ensure that compliance is every employee's responsibility in the department and not only that of senior management. That is our report to you, Honourable Chairperson and members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and thanks, ADG. I think there are two issues that the Acting DG did allude to. The issue of distinctive choice, where a service provider was appointed without a contract. I think it's also a matter that the RGU process is in place, and the matter is before the courts. And also, I think the Acting DG did indicate that there are also processes to determine or to solicit legal advice in terms of those who have left the department in terms of the possibility of recovery. So it's a matter that was detected in 2009, but it actually links to the matter that was detected in 2006-07. On the issue of duplicate payments, It's a matter where officials in the department requested the services from a service provider, and later on that process was abandoned, another service provider was then brought on board. Unfortunately, the matter had to go to court, and the initial service provider then won the matter, where the court ruled that the service provider had to be paid. As we are talking at the moment, the matter is with the state attorneys to advise on the way forward, because the reasons that were furnished by the officials involved could not just add up. So the matter has been referred to the legal people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, first of all, thank you to Mr. Wessels for the presentation, but I see he's the Acting Director General. So my first question is, how long has he been in the position, in the acting position? I don't have to answer now at the end, but I've got a few questions. Madam Chair, the second question is related to the fact that he's acting. The minister should actually be here, because the minister is ultimately responsible. The buck stops with him. And I would like to ask the minister in his absence, when is he intending to appoint a permanent director general? Because his department's got lots of problems. It's one of the serial offenders. And when is he going to appoint the permanent director general? The third question is, or a third one is actually a remark. In the report by the Auditor General, on page 30, we see that communications, this department is actually regressed. They got a qualified report, and in terms of the key at the bottom, we see that purple means regressed. So they're not going forward, they're actually going backward. And I want to know why, what can you further explain to us? In spite of all the measures that you're taking to improve the situation, you've gone backwards, you've regressed. And the next question is the fact that you've regressed. It may be related to the fact that some of the problems for the wasteful and irregular expenditure goes back to 2006, 2007. And now we see disciplinary processes is currently underway. That's 5-6 years later. When will these processes be finalized? We now need dates. When will it be finalized? It can't be underway forever and ever and ever, and nothing actually happens. It says here DBAC has recommended that precautionary letters be issued to officials. Now, it's recommended that. So, great, they've recommended. Has it actually been implemented? Has these letters been sent? Then we read on the next page that corrective measures, recommendations were that steps be taken against officials who are responsible for this transaction. No steps have been taken so far. Why not, and when will these steps be taken? There's a recommendation. When will this recommendation actually be implemented? And so we carry on and on. And then we see about 2009, 2010, the former CFO was responsible for this transaction and has since left the department. Now, this happens all the time. People are implicated in irregularities. There's a disciplinary hearing, fits, and they disappear, and a few months later, they reappear somewhere else. Now, I want to know, why have you not instituted criminal charges against this man, who is now just jumped, and what have you done to actually recover that money from him? And same story, corrective measures on the next page, currently underway So really, it's not good enough to say recommendations have been made and it's currently underway. We actually need to bring matters to conclusion and we need to see results. So I want to see results. When are these processes finalized, and when will people actually be criminally charged, and when will the money recovered?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and must also thank the AG and the department. mine is not necessarily a question. It's a comment, I think with some kind of what is it that we're supposed to do, or the department must do in moving forward. We know that there are labor laws in this country where you cannot just decide on what form of disciplinary action that has to be taken against an individual. There are processes that need to be followed. That is in line with the constitution of the country. That make reference to fair labor practices. So each and every government department and to an even public, I mean private sector, they are supposed to whatever they do is in line with the constitution. I think what the department can assist us on, Chairperson, with the pending cases where there are, you are still seeking legal opinion on how to deal with particular cases, and even those that are in courts, even the current disciplinary hearings that are taking place to those who have been identified by the investigations that took place as a result of the AG's report and the reports internally. I think it's important that the Parliament is kept informed of in what stage are you, because just to say the matter has been referred to state legal advisors and had not known, because it's difficult to say bring us the update next week, because the state law advisors are not only working with communication department alone, all the departments they are associated with them. So, but the point I'm raising, Chair, is that I think the department must find a way of informing Parliament of where are you with investigations and also with the disciplinary hearings that are taking place to those who have been alleged to misconduct. That's one point. The second point is, I think the we haven't rejected the apology from the ministers, because the ministers, we all know that this afternoon the Minister of Finance will be delivering his budget speech. So obviously ministers now are with that minister. It is also their responsibility too. So the point I'm raising is that we never rejected any apology here, and I think sometimes it's unfair to ask a question to somebody who is not the person whom the question is directed to. For the acting DG to say when he is going to be permanent or somebody to be permanent DG, no, I think that question is a little bit unfair. I thought, let me just raise those. But I think the response that I'm expecting from the department, in a way, is to say they're intending, for argument's sake, to submit reports to the portfolio committee in 3 months' time. For me, that is very much important, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I think, Chair, I would want to appreciate the presentation that was made by the Department of Communications. It has to be a little bit specific in observing in providing information to be transparent. What I just want to request them to do is to be a little bit, to move with a little bit of speed on some of the cases, because these cases differ in their degrees in terms of their gravity or their seriousness. Those that are not much serious, surely a swift action should be done. Those that are in courts, well, not in your powers, but surely we need to find a way of not recurring in, when we wind off a particular financial year. Those issues that came up to irregular expenses, unauthorized and so on, should have been dealt with very swiftly. Because the question of time frames, I think, if you listen to the previous speakers, we're eager to hear, because we can't have this recurring cases, even though they are a little bit small in amounts, some of them. Some of them need some serious attention. And also on the question of the vacancies, I will not raise my issue here as to when, because I have this understanding that government has pronounced through the president to say all vacant posts should be filled in by a particular time frame. So I would maybe say we need to have regularized our meetings so that we follow the in-year monitoring by the committee, having quarterly reports or in-year, half-yearly reports, so as to check the progress thereof. Today you have presented this case, and we understand there are vacancies, but surely at a particular time we'll have to check the progress thereof. Otherwise, Chairperson, for me, this double payment, it's a pity that we have to take this route, duplicate payments on page 7 on your slide. I accept that that explanation, but surely it seems to me we did not prepare enough as a department, hence we could not win the case, hence to be told to pay. So we need to be a little bit also smarter and do our homework so that we don't get an embarrassment at a particular time. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I want to ask a short question. Why is it so difficult to adhere to the correct tender procedures? We find it in so many government departments. Is it a problem with management, would you say, or why is it so difficult? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. How long I'm in this acting position? 7 months, since 23rd of June last year. So you will understand that I had to do a lot of homework to understand the issues and the problems, identify the problems, and then to come up with corrective measures. And, you know, that is not an easy task. And, of course, once things are in the courts or in the lawyer's domain, then, you know, its processes are beyond your control. So I think we've worked very hard to understand the problems in the department. And, of course, we're also working very hard at the moment to give the incoming DG a clean book. So we hope that all these matters will be dealt with, those matters that you can deal with, before the end of March, so that we've dealt with all these legacy problems, and for a new DG then to hit the ground running. So that is the kind of time frames that we're working with. Of course, the precautionary letters, we now have a good sense of what happened, and that will start actually from Monday onwards. We were issuing these letters and warnings and so on, what must be done. The appointment of the DG, that will take place very soon. The post has been advertised. The applications closed on the 11th of this month, and if everything goes according to plan, the new DG will be in office on the 1st of April. We have also identified 24 critical posts in the department. We've advertised those. And again, if everything goes according to plan, those posts will be filled April, May. And we have, and then there are a number of other posts as well. But we phase this in order to build capacity first so that we know where we're going. On the financial issues that you've raised, Honorable Dreyer, I ask Mr. Vilakazi to respond to those. So most of the cases in the courts are at the hearing process. Investigations have been done, documents, you know, identified, so the investigations are done. It's in the hearing process, and I mean, there is time that we just, you know, have. It's very time consuming, but things are happening. We're not investigating any longer. Everything, we know where we are and what we're supposed to be doing. And I think it's important that we will keep the committee up to date with reports as to exactly, you know, where things are as we proceed in the hearing processes. Yes, why it is not, why it's so difficult to adhere to processes and in particular the tendering processes. It's a matter of knowledge, and that is why we've decided to do serious training in the department. You know, a tendering process is a very involved process, and if you're on a tendering committee and you don't understand the processes, then you can't do your job properly. So in order to deal with that, we're now training people in supply chain management. We're training, because sometimes colleagues come in from outside into a certain level in government, and they need to be trained on the job, like in any company or any working environment. So in most cases, it's really colleagues not having the appropriate knowledge to deal with the tendering process in all its variety. So on the financial matters, Mr. Vilakazi, can you comment on those?
Thanks, ADG, and thanks, Chair. I think on the issue raised by the Honourable Member in terms of why the department has regressed, I just wanted to perhaps indicate that as the AG has already indicated, the qualification was mainly based on irregular expenditure, and the bulk of that expenditure relates to prior years. And I think when the acting DG took over, one of the things that had to be done was to look into the key internal controls, because really the issue at hand is the fact that the key internal controls within the department were not functional. And in some instances, there was just violation of policies. Not to say that policies were not there. And all of that has now been reversed. Policies are in place. Key internal controls are in place. We have been working very hard with the Auditor General to make sure that all the recommendations are implemented. And I think I must put to the committee that compliance in the department has significantly improved. We do not have incidents of irregular expenditure occurring, because I think officials in the department, as we speak, they now understand the importance of the challenges of not adhering to proper procurement processes. Because in the past, this function was regarded as a function that belonged to perhaps maybe the DG or the finance function. It is a function that everyone in the department now understands that compliance is a must for everyone. It's not only meant for a certain section of the department. And I think it also then talks to the issue of saying, why is it difficult to adhere to procurement processes? I think it's just a matter of really people not, in some instances, yes, you find that there are cases of ignorance, and in some cases you find that these things are done deliberately. But I think the measures that have been put in place, the key internal controls that have been put in place, are enabling the department to detect things even before they happen and take corrective measures. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. What's worrying is that you have the same service provider. 2006, 2008, and 2009 and 2010, being awarded the tender without following the proper processes. I think that you should take note of that, because you can't have the same service provider. And maybe we'll ask yourself whether the employees are not the same employees that did that in 2006, 2008, and 2009 and 2010. And also, according to the PFMA, it constitutes a financial misconduct for an accounting officer to make or permit an unauthorized expenditure. So we should take proper discipline to whoever allows an unauthorized or wasteful expenditure to occur. And from the Auditor General, do you have something?
Chairperson, I think at this stage nothing specific from our side. Thank you.
Any more questions for the Department of Communications? Honorable Dreyer?
Yes, Madam Chair, I hear what the acting DG is saying about people don't know, and therefore they've now started a very intensive training program. And training, you can never argue with training. Training is always good, so we've got to support that. But I don't fully buy that argument that people kind of get involved in irregular tendering because they didn't know. Sometimes you actually have to be quite clever to bypass rules and regulations and to enrich yourself. The Auditor General found, is it 2 years ago, 2008, I can't find the exact page now, but that one where there are more than 2,000 state civil service employees were involved in tendering processes to the tune of 610 million rand, where they awarded tenders to businesses where they themselves or their wives or their immediate family had a direct interest. You remember that was actually the front page of Sunday Times a year or two ago. That was the big splash. And somewhere in this report, in this book that I can't find the exact page on, says that we're still waiting for action to be taken against those officials implied. That is now 3 years, 4 years ago. So nothing has happened there. There's a lack of political will, and that's why I'm sorry the minister's not here, because he must lead from the top. But secondly, I want to, this case shows that it's not just ignorance or lack of knowledge. They actually formed businesses with their wives, their daughters-in-laws, or your cousin, or whoever, and then award that contract, the government contract, to your own company. It's not stupidity. It's not ignorance. It's actually quite clever to enrich yourself. So we must be careful. Say, oh, people didn't know. Then forever they can say, oh, I didn't know. And ignorance is not an excuse. So training is good, but people shouldn't get away with criminal activity and stealing taxpayers' money when they actually have to be quite clever to circumvent the rules.
Honorable Maluleke.
Thank you, Chair. Let me firstly appreciate the presentation by the acting DG. I think most of the time you can see it's not easy to manage to reach where the department has reached. The only thing is that, DG, things are good in papers. But if you can see this paper is good, and implementation, if you can have implementation, it will also make the department to be on the good state. So what I'm saying is only to commend that it needs to put your foot on the department to reach what you have, the good work that you have done in the presentation. The only thing that I wanted to say, we thank the transparency of the report, and I hope you are not from Western Cape, because people who are doing good work, most of the time they refer them from Western Cape. Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Members. Maybe the other thing to note, Honorable Members, is that with the Department of Communications, for 2009-2010, with the submission of financial disclosure form, 87 forms were expected, and 0% were submitted. The due date, 31st of May 2010. And what is Parliament saying about that? These people are handling the state money. They did not submit financial disclosure forms. And we cannot keep quiet and smile about that. And we cannot say, is the acting DG here? But what is happening? Before even the acting DG, you expect 87 forms, you get 0 forms. As Parliament, we cannot keep quiet acting DG. Whether you are acting or not, there were some people who were supposed to submit and they did not submit, even if there was no DG, but there were people who were supposed to submit. And thank you to the Department of Communications. Go and do your work. For now, we'll ask the Auditor General to report on the Department of Public Works, and after that, they'll present also.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I've indicated earlier, it's important to note that on the Department of Public Works, it's actually two entities, Department of Public Works itself and then the Property Management Trading Entity, which is a trading account linked to the Department of Public Works. On the audit outcomes, just briefly, there was a qualification on intangible, immovable, tangible capital assets, and then a qualification on irregular expenditure, which is similar to that we've discussed at the Department of Communication, in the sense that as the auditors, we could not verify the completeness of the disclosure of the irregular expenditure. So we cannot sign off that the irregular expenditure disclosed in the financial statements is actually all the irregular expenditure that disclosed during the period under review. There was the standard emphasis of matter on basis of accounting that we discussed earlier on, and then we just emphasized about 389,000 rand of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which the department can give you the details of. Important to note then, I picked up that members were looking at audit outcomes and movement in audit outcomes. The net audit outcome for Department of Public Works, if you look in that general report, stayed the same. So the status, therefore, is unchanged. However, if you look at the Property Management Trading Entity, the net audit outcome was a improvement from a adverse audit opinion to a qualified audit opinion. The reason for the adverse audit opinion in the previous year relates to the fact that the financial statements of the property management trading entity was compiled on the modified cash basis of accounting instead of on GAAP. So it's a, if I can call it like that, a technical issue. The department has been since for the 19 financial year compiled the financial statements on GAAP. Just briefly then, in the property management trading entity, there was qualifications on revenue and receivables, related parties, and expenditure and payables, but my understanding is that the focus of this committee is not really on that. There was a similar qualification then on irregular expenditure in that we could not conclude that all the irregular expenditure has indeed been identified and disclosed in the financial statements. If we look at the more specifically at the amounts involved, the irregular expenditure that was disclosed by the department in the financial statements of the department was 27 million, and in the case of the property management trading entity, it was 264 million. The reasons are the same: proper procurement processes not followed, which resulted in irregular expenditure. The department can also give you the details. There's some cases of tax clearance certificates not being obtained. And once again, key to this is that a department or entity should have a proper system for identifying and recording irregular expenditure. And then again, we just highlighted, you know, that we believe that that leadership should have oversight over compliance with laws and regulations. The brief that we received covered unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful and irregular, so just for completeness sake, we did give you some information on unauthorized. There were no unauthorized expenditure for the 19 financial year, so my understanding is that therefore there's no focus from this committee on that. However, there were some unauthorized expenditure which incurred in the 08-09 financial year, which mainly relates to overspending on personnel expenditure. But that has been dealt with, and that's in the process now to get approval from Parliament, hopefully for that unauthorized expenditure. So, so there's a total of 58 million which is still awaiting approval. On the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there was the 289,000 rands of which the department can give you the details. That is to deal with 19. The previous irregular expenditure comes from many years back, 2004-2005. So in the recent years, there were not really fruitless and wasteful expenditure which has been reported by the department. So I think the focus should be on the 389,000. The rest of it then just deals with other items that have been reported under non-compliance, and I think we've agreed earlier on that unless you've got a specific interest on that, because it's not the focus of that this meeting, that we will not specifically focus on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Auditor General. And now we will call on Ms. Lydia Beattie, the Acting Chief Operating Officer from Public Works, to present to us.
Thank you, Chair. Just to introduce our delegation, firstly, an apology for the Acting DG. Unfortunately, he could not be here with us. My name is Lydia Pique. I'm the Acting COO of the Department. Chief Financial Officer K.C. Motsisi is going to make the presentation. Also with us, we've got the Acting DDG Corporate Services, Thembi Hlatshwayo. We've got Adam Thombeni, who is the Chief Director, Intergovernmental Relations. We've also got Danny Oliphant, who is the Parliamentary Liaison Officer. K.C., as the Chief Financial Officer, will make the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The purpose of our presentation is to discuss the measures implemented by the Department in addressing the reported irregular and fruitless expenditure with the committee. Chair, just to report on the fruitless irregular expenditure incurred in during the year 2009-10, and also to mention that the 30.8 million that I'm referring to is the vote and not our PMT account. We reported 30.8 million, which is broken down in two parts. In about 15.6 million related to proper procurement processes not followed. Just to unpack on proper procurement processes not followed, in most cases you will find a situation where three quotations needed to be sourced. Now, when you go out to service providers to say, provide me quotations within a period of 7 days. Now, after 7 days, if there is only one service provider who has responded, you proceed with the request. You don't wait for another 7 days. Otherwise, it actually hampers around the turnaround time. In other instances, you'd find a situation where in the files that we keep, perhaps one of the documents is missing, which needs to justify that we sent out documents to three service providers, only one or two of them responded, but wouldn't necessarily have that evidence in the file to say, yes, three service providers were contacted, but only two responded. And some of these cases relate to term contracts where the procurement was actually concluded even years back, but because the contract is still running, there will still be samples in the selection that is done by the AG. The other matter which was new, if we look at all the other cases that we received, was the tax clearance certificate not attached. A lot of these cases related to contracts that were concluded 3 years, 4 years back. The department had a policy which allowed us to appoint service providers from the CIDB database. Now, during those years, it was concluded that if you are accredited through the CIDB, then you have a tax clearance, because CIDB wouldn't accredit you if you don't have a tax clearance certificate. And the selection of service providers was done using the CIDB database. And therefore, the department itself did not keep or request the copies of the tax clearance certificate. But that was since changed almost 2 years ago. The only challenge that faced us was that some of the contracts are still running. And when the AG finds a transaction that has gone through, they, in terms of their processes, they would go back to the procurement process that was implemented then and check if everything was above board. And that is the challenge that we had with these tax clearance certificates. It is not like currently we are not asking for those. The position was changed almost 2 years back. And as it is, we can't go back and put in those tax clearance certificates. So what we did as a department was to go through a condonation process where we clear this irregular expenditure. We also reported fruitless expenditure of 389,000. The bulk of the 389 relates to its Bloemfontein and the Joburg office, where clients would vacate the buildings, the properties, before the end of the contract. Now, the nature of the lease agreements that we enter into is that Public Works is the landlord. We enter into a contract on behalf of the client. Now, if the client vacates the property before the end of the contract, we are still obliged to pay the landlord and then pursue the case of recovering from the department, from the department that had occupied the property. This matter is still under investigation, as it dates back to almost 2000, 2001, 2002, where the client vacated, but the landlord never came to pursue the case of claiming the balance of the lease, and most of these amounts only came to be realized in the year which was under review then. Irregular expenditure of 264 million. This relates to our property management entity, where we realized no proper authorization. you'd find a situation where the project manager, there are delegations for assistant director, for deputy director, for a director, property management. And in some instances, you'd find a situation where an assistant director has signed for a contract that was $1.2 million when that person's delegations are up to $1 million. And in some instances, there was no acting appointment letter. You find that the assistant director was actually operating in that position, but we couldn't provide the AG with the acting appointment letter. And most of these cases are going through the analysis and the condonation processes. No tax clearance certificate relates to what I explained previously, where contracts, where we used to rely on a CIDB database. But those that are current, we've handed the cases to internal audit, and in our discussions with them, most of these cases will be finalized before the end of the financial year, so that if there are people who need to be taken through disciplinary processes, that can be done. No supporting documents. This is one case where the AG could not get the supporting documents for them to be able to conclude. And when we say supporting document, it's not like the whole 109 in terms of the tender documents were not there. You'll find that within the batch of documents that were required by the AG, perhaps it's minutes of meetings that were held or certain agreements that were entered into, it's documents that are missing in the pile of the documents that were needed by the AG. Now, what we have done was to go back to the regions that incurred this, to ask them to provide these documents, look for the documents and submit. I'm aware that our Northwest office has submitted some of the documents that were required by the AG during their audit. Procurement processes not followed. It's cases where three quotations were not sourced, or where a bidding, open bidding process was supposed to have been implemented, but due to the nature or the urgency of the matter, the bidding process was not followed, and the deviation approvals were not also received on time. As after realizing all these irregular and fruitless expenditure, as a department, what we noticed was that given the nature and the complexity of our business, particularly on leasing and projects, we have set up a structure called a compliance unit. We've already advertised for the head of that unit, where periodically the unit will just focus on going back to all the transactions and identifying all these irregular expenditures. More particularly, that one of the recommendations from the AG was that we need to have systems to proactively identify irregular expenditure. Now, this compliance unit, even though we've got a compensating control currently where we've allowed officials to go to the regions to go and check all the transactions retrospectively, it will focus just on inspectorate, checking whatever has been done and making sure that if cases of irregularity identified, they are dealt with on time, not a year after the audit has taken place. We've also observed a gap in terms of the policies that can guide all the regions and all our managers in terms of how they should handle irregular expenditure. We've developed a policy that we started rolling out in January to all the regions, but even prior to the policy, we had already developed a template that is used by the regions to report to us monthly. We have a committee in my office at head office level where we look at the various cases and be able to quickly resolve if they fall under the category of irregular or if we need to escalate to internal audit, or if we can immediately decide on remedies that must be applied. We've also looked at proactive handling of these issues by developing checklists so that all the committees, when they sit, whether it's be the adjudication committee or evaluation committee, and including on the payment side, they have checklists that they can help them to guide them in terms of ensuring that certain documents are there before any transactions can be approved. This has gone a long way in us proactively being able to check if everything that the AG is going to need or if everything that supports the transaction is attached to the document person. previously we used not to validate VAT registration. In terms of the supply chain guidelines, we validate the tax clearance certificates, but we never used to validate the VAT registration. So since this irregularity was identified, every payment before it is made, the VAT registration number is validated against SARS for us to check if it's a valid a registration number. And what we also did was to then go back retrospectively to April to say these issues, even though they were concretized later in the year, we need to go back and check all the documents to ensure that the same issues that were raised are not found in the next audit, and we start putting in place corrective measures. Most of the cases that are reported now are still under investigation, but we've managed to condone quite a number of those that were brought to the this committee that I spoke to, about, to say it is another mechanism to fast-track the resolving of these cases. Where there are issues of liability, obviously, if after being determined by internal audit, disciplinary measures will be put in place. We've also proposed new structures that will address internal controls. We are already working on centralizing all the contracts. Previously, the contracts were decentralized to all the regions and legal services. So we started a project where we want all the contracts centralized so that we can look at the form and content of all those contracts and make sure that everything complies. We are also in the process of reviewing the SCM processes, because one of the gaps that we realized was the fact that some of the processes within the procurement process were not clearly understood, or some were very long. There are steps that do not really add value, but they complicate the compliance issues. The issues of interpretation. For a long time, as Public Works, we've always had this negotiated and nominated processes, and it is now recently where we were told that they are not in alignment with National Treasury guidelines. But if you look at all the transactions that took place in the department in the previous years, there has never been an audit query around the policy that we're implementing of negotiated and the policy of nominated processes. So these are some of the things that we're looking at to align to ensure that we correct for future purposes. We also had the fruitless expenditure of 389,000. I think this is what I referred to in terms of the leases that have expired. We have already started a project to verify occupancy on leased property to enable proactive identification and resolving of possible fruitless expenditure emanating from unused buildings. We started last year already to reconcile occupation so that we can know the all the clients in terms of what they occupy and be able to deter any possible fruitless expenditure from clients vacating before the end of the contract. The initiatives also aimed at improving internal controls and engaging client departments where the fruitless expenditure is as a result of non-compliance. We believe strongly that they will contribute significantly in reducing fruitless expenditure. We are having one-on-ones with client departments, discussing their challenges, discussing the issues, so that we can be able to proactively correct. We are also reviewing the organizational design to redirect resources to areas such as property management, facilities management, including supply chain management. I must also add that we've already started the process of filling all the current vacant posts to ensure that there's enough capacity to implement proper segregation of duties too. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. There's tea outside. I was thinking that we hold on to our questions. We go out for tea and for 10 minutes. Then after 10 minutes, we come back. We continue with the engagement with the Department of Public Works.
Thank you. The minister. So what is it? When is that? Very curious. So why would you do that? When is it? When is it?
Sitting in the corner, she has extra copies. She tells me no. I I go to the secretary, the secretary says it's all stack of copies. Strange way.
Honourable members, I think we should continue with our meeting. Ma'am Lydia asked to make some inputs before our questions. So over to you, Ma Biki.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Just to add on what the CFO has presented, for instance, on the case of some of the procurement processes not followed, the issue of pre-quotations, I just want to give you one demonstration. For instance, of a region that is widespread, one of our regions, which is Mthatha, you ask for three quotations. And the just to make an example again, the contractors, they are spread throughout the region. And you find that one relevant contractor in that level of CIDB that you require is in Alwal North. Another one is in Mthatha, which is right in the central area where our office is. Another one is in Tabankulu, wherever, at the beginning and end of the province. You will find that contractors themselves, they take a decision that the size of the quotation is too much expensive for them to go. And sometimes some of them, they are contractors that are on grade one. They don't even have facilities. So they have to drive all the way to Mthatha from one corner to Mthatha just to present their quotation. And sometimes they don't even win. So in our records, we'll have three quotations having been asked. But what we receive back is just two quotations, or even in certain instances, one quotation. In terms of the issue that comes up quite often, the issue of clients vacating buildings without prior notice or expiry of the contract, is a broader issue of client service that we as a department would deal with. We have taken a decision, I think the CFO has mentioned, we have taken a decision as EXCO members, led by the acting DG, to actually engage all the clients. We started in the past 2 weeks, we are seeing them one by one to get to understand their needs. Originally, or under normal circumstances, we've got a unit that is called Key Accounts Management Unit that will deal with the client in terms of their needs and providing those needs, and the requests come to the system in the department. Now we've started to engage them. That will talk to the issues of what they need that is new or existing requirements. If they are in a building, do they want to vacate the building, and what are the plans that we need to put in place? So that's one of the things that we've taken. The other decision that we've taken is that the property management activities, they were spread throughout the organization. So somebody would deal with property management, would deal with construction management. We centralized those activities in the office of the COO to make sure that, you know, at least the property management, somebody can account for it. That includes the needs of the client as well as providing accommodation. CFO has spoken about the issues, some of the things that come up later in terms of changes in policy. We've put them in the checklist. If you did not have a requirement for a tax clearance certificate because the policy did not require that at a certain point, now we put them in the checking list. Whether you are in the evaluation committee or in the bid committee, the first thing that you do when you are in the evaluation committee, make sure that you've done all the things or submitted all the documents. When you are a bid committee, before you even adjudicate the bid, you have to tick all. If one of those documents is not there, you send it back. But obviously, you know, that's, we can't undo what has happened before. She has spoken about the capacitation of the legal services and supply chain units, so that when, as a department, we should not, when AG is asking for a contract, we should not go to Mpumalanga. We should click a system, an electronic system, that you will click a button and somebody has managed that list in terms of escalation, in terms of expiry, and the times to negotiate the list. We are working on that. That will be centralized within our legal services unit. Thank you, Jen.
For a change, let me speak before her.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's appreciate the presentation, both by the AG and the department. A clarity, in a way, combined with the comments. Correct me, department, if I'm wrong. The irregular, fruitless, and everything that goes with that doesn't necessarily mean that a service has not been provided. And I think at the same time, linked with that, as leadership in the department, whilst not necessarily saying it is correct to do things not following the correct procedures laid down, these services that have been provided was to you as leaders is services that you were requiring as a department. I know one that the CEO, Herman, you did you say? I'm promoting you. CFO, that relates to properties. I know that one is very difficult if someone decided to vacate a particular property. You as a department, you have to incur whatever, even if there is financial implications of that, but you have to take care of that. But I think what you don't just sit back and say a client decided to vacate a property in Umtata, so therefore you just look for another one. If there are legalities that need to be taken into account, I think it's important for you as a department in such cases, isolate certain cases, you see, and then say, this is how far you have gone in trying to correct the wrongs that were done in the past. I think it's important because in the presentation, you are also reflecting progress to date on irregular expenditure and everything else. The point I'm making here is that I think these are good, but there are certain things that you need to put time frame as to when do you want to see this in place and finalized. Because that's the only focus on the procedures and train and do all those things. There are matters that you need to put time frames on, that by this time, this must be done. By this time, this must be done. Because that will make Parliament at the same time to realize that work is done. You get my point. So those are the two points. The last point is that you have had Department of Communications trying to centralize the sourcing of goods. But I'm hearing you that you are not necessarily taking that direction, but however, you are trying to put systems where you can control them even at the head office level. So my point is that can't you then also look at that in saying that you need to centralize certain things, not everything. I will tell you why I'm saying not everything, because I'm also serving in the Department of Labor, in Paul Fukumet on Labor. We once had oversight last year wanted to find out everything is centralized, even to purchase a pen. A pen, then you must make an application. So the point I'm making is I think you need to categorize these services and see certain services that can be centralized and others that can be done, whether in the provincial or regional level. But I think the progress to date it looks good. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I see that the most of the problems center around the tendering process. Okay, so let's focus on that. A key component of a healthy and an open tendering process is the declaration of financial interests by the senior managers to prevent conflict of interest. So it's really it's paramount that we have a declaration of financial interest. Now, every year, the senior managers have to submit their forms with declaring their financial interest not later than 30 April. Now, for the last 3 years, 2007 up to 2010, the national average has actually first gone up a little and then gone down. So last year, 2009 to 2010, it was only 46% of senior managers bothered to submit their financial interest by due date. But then even worse is that some did not submit at all. Some submitted a small number or late and so on. But I see the public works is really a leading example of the serious culprits. Last year's declaration for financial interest, the public works, there are 131 senior managers involved that would be required to submit their financial disclosures. Of them, no one, zero, naught percent, actually submitted their financial disclosures by the due date. That is according to a survey by the Public Service Commission. So I want to know, what have you done to those senior managers that have not disclosed their financial interest? What consequences were there for them? And what are you doing to prevent a recurrence of this event this year? Because we're now middle February, March, April, in 2 months' time, it's once again due date for financial disclosures. What are you doing to prevent this from happening again? But last point, Madam Chair, that I made in the when the communications department was here, I said, you know, it starts from the top, the political leadership. And when things are going well, you can look at the political leadership provided from the top. When things are going not well, you can also look at the political leadership. And maybe that's an indictment. The minister's not here today to defend the department. And we see the department's not doing well at all. And the latest scandal is this 500 million rand SAPS headquarters deal. The public protectors found it to be unlawful. And the fingers are pointing not only to the police commissioner, but also to the minister herself. So, Madam Chair, it's not to the officials, I realize that, but why is the minister not here today? She has to account to us. We have to hold the minister to account for things are going seriously wrong in her department. Because I would have loved to ask her some questions, you know. She actually okayed this deal, said this, the lease of this building can go ahead, while there was already an investigation underway. And the previous minister, Jeff Deutsch, he found the deal to be invalid, and he said he would not finalize its lease pending the outcome of the public protector's investigation. Yet the current minister actually gave the go-ahead for that. So that's a comment that I make because the minister's not here, but maybe the officials, the people who are here, can shed some light on that. But then I want them to particularly respond to me about the non-disclosure of the financial interests by due date. None last year. Where are we now this year?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will refuse to be tempted to follow the trend of the newspaper rather than the report. Maybe I should switch over to sit in that Committee of Public Works as a committee full member.
But I think, Chairperson, I just want to say to the department, you know, we should not do things as if we don't have some laws that govern the department, especially the accounting officers. I'm raising this matter looking at your unauthorized irregular expenditure. Because I'm raising that because were it for me, were it not for the AG's report, it means in my ignorance that money could have escalated because they would do it as business as usual on that irregular expenditure. But because the AG has picked that up, now the department is reacting, and yet there are laws that are governing the accounting officers. The PFMA is very clear on clause 38.1, subsection G. I think they are very clear on the role and the responsibilities of our accounting officers. I will just one sentence, Chairperson, with your permission, to say that amongst other issues that they need to do, they say on discovery of the unauthorized, irregular, or fruitless and wasteful expenditure, must immediately report in writing particulars of the expenditure to the Treasurer, and in the case of irregular expenditure involving the procurement of goods or services, also to the relevant tender board. Now, it seems to me things were just happening, and the accounting officer was not looking into that. In fact, there are more. In fact, that clause 38, I'm harping on it deliberately because it directs the accounting officer what to do. And where you find one who has flouted those responsibilities, the culprit should be brought to book immediately. There's no beating about the bush. We need. It directs the accounting officer, and it seems to me that has not happened. You know, I'm saying we should not act as if there are no laws that are governing us. In fact, if I can take it further, Chapter 10 of the Constitution tells us what to do in terms of the accounting officer, once again, his or her responsibilities. So we can't behave as if there are no laws that are governing us and try to have new laws outside what we're expected to do. So I'm saying I'm very much concerned if this is the trend, we'll overlook the laws that govern us and try to find other means of excuses not to deal with issues head on. You must be rather unpopular for good decisions that you are taking for clean and good governance. That is my bottom line, Chairperson. The second issue, Chairperson, I understand they do have a turnaround strategy in dealing with these matters, because my question was, which I was intending to ask, was around the capacity if you put systems in place. I would have loved to get to check, if you talk capacity, what do you mean if you say you've got a unit that you've established and a post will be advertised? That unit of yours, how many people will constitute that unit? Because sometimes you'll find a person, one person, is a unit unto himself with a load of work, and by so doing, shortening his or her life span, getting the opportunistic diseases that were not there to him. While she came to the employee, she was healthy. Less than 3 months, he develops diseases that he did not have because of stress levels that she or he confronts in the department. So the word capacity should be explained to us, because it must be equal to the challenge of the department at that particular time. So can I get the issue of the capacity? How many people to deal with these issues would you be satisfied to do the job? Because if you talk finance, it's quite a huge amount of money, this, and this is a public document. And in the manner in which it is written, also in your source book, will not tell a good story to the taxpayers. So your turnaround should be more give more hope to those responses. So my issue, Chairperson, is around really on the issue of the capacity. And the last point, you are saying on the progress on the irregular expenditure, on your slide number 3, page 3, in fact, you've requested all regions to be allowed to work overtime. Is there a way to guard that that overtime is not being misused by officials? Because there are financial implications. It might that you've not budgeted it, but you transfer or you do vireaments to cover that. I just want to say this issue of the overtime also should be looked with a precaution so that you don't find yourself adversely affected by your funds in the running. The last issue on the same issue on developing new policies and improve internal controls. Just want to check whether have you had some workshops to school those that you did not understand what you want to achieve by the end of the day, so that when you implement these turnaround strategies, that is everybody reads from the same page. We are all equal in relation to what you are raising. On page 4, Chairperson, I know I've raised the issue of the capacity in that page, but below that, the last bullet point on the first slide above, the proposed review of the SCM processes will, to a large extent, also address the irregular expenditure, which comes as a result of the policy conflicts. You made an example of the interpretation of negotiated and nominated. You see, this one, it seems to me, Chairperson, it was around the gentleman's agreement. Once you negotiate a tender, because of the systems that were not there, who knows that one was not favored all the time over others who were doing a quite good job. I'm just fearing, I'm taking a leaf from what the COO, Mamu Pitu, was making an example of Mtata vis-a-vis Alwal North, the distances of 300 kilometers in between, and those that are closer in the urban areas with all the modern technology to arrive on time. Now, how do you avoid this situation as not to recur to those that are disadvantaged, especially those that are coming from the rural provinces, to submit on time their tenders, because I see that you are trying to change that scenario so that we move away from the negotiated, which I call the gentleman's agreement, rather than to do it procedurally. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I want to add to what Honorable Suka said. I want to refer to the compliance unit you are setting up at the moment. You are in the process of appointing a head of the unit. What criteria? You talked about the capacity of the unit. I want to talk about the head specifically. What criteria would you apply for the head of such a unit? I suppose there will be a big salary attached to that post. So what must that person be able to do? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The members of our team will respond to some of the questions. We take note of a number of advices that we've got from the honourable members. Honourable Nyakemba raised an issue of centralisation, as you have seen it, centralisation of procurement or an advice of centralisation of procurement procedures, and also cautioning that we should not over centralise. I'm glad to announce that as EXCO, actually, we have taken a decision very recently in the past week not to centralize all procurement procedures, but to increase and decrease the delegation. What we do is that at a regional level, currently, for instance, if you talk about procurement of accommodation, we would give the regional offices on anything that is 20 million and above on leases, for example, they would have to go to head office. You would have different delegations, whether it's a construction or other services. What we are reviewing now is to look at those delegations, possibly with the interest of looking at increasing the head office delegation. That means you are centralizing at a certain level of the procurement to try and deal with possible, you know, procurement processes. We are looking at that. We have not finalized that. We've got delegations that are set, but we are reviewing that whether we should not lower the level so that we don't spread the possibility of problems. On the issue of declarations, actually, this is one issue that is driven in the department at all times by the minister as well as the accounting officer. That means all of us. It's an issue that we take very seriously. According to our information, out of that total of officials that are supposed to declare, only three that have not disclosed their interest, and warning letters have been issued. The point is that there was late submission. They have to go through the process to the minister, signed by the minister, and then submitted to Public Service Commission. We are aware that they were submitted late. I don't know the process. It might be that in that report it's reflected as not submitted. And I know that at least the colleagues that I hear, including myself, we did submit, but it was a matter of submission. But we're aware, late submission, but we're aware that three people that were supposed to have submitted did not submit, and warning letters have been given. We take that matter as Public Works very seriously. There was one issue. Yeah, I will allow I think for obvious reasons, the issue of the 500 lease, we will not be able to deal with it.
Thanks, honorable members. Perhaps just to also give you comfort in terms of the centralization, to say as a department, we had already taken a decision last year to centralize anything that is above 20 million. What we need to enhance now is the procurement processes within that 20 million, so that the evaluation can also be centralized. But it's something that we are passionate about, that we are working on. The question posed by a member was the issue of the accounting officer's responsibilities, also quoting from the PFMA, which we truly appreciate. And we can give you comfort to say that we don't wait for the AG to identify the problems, and then we just work on what the AG has raised. We have the internal audit that does their internal audit work throughout the year. They identify these issues, and we try to work on them. And from finance, we proactively also engage all the regions and go through transactions. Perhaps the issue of the overtime, it's one of the initiatives that we try to put in place to proactively go in and do our own inspectorate, because before the AG can come in and also select their samples. Yes, indeed, we are cautious about the overtime and the compliance issues, because they can also translate into some irregularities. The compliance unit, the reason why it's headed by a director, it's because we've taken this matter serious. That says the budget of DPW is almost 8 billion before you include the funds that we get from the client departments, and therefore it requires that the compliance unit must be very strong. And the structure, if I'm correct, has got about 9 to 10 people under the director who will be placed in all the regions to ensure that we proactively identify these issues. In terms of the negotiated and nominated, I noticed that negotiated could be easily translated as a
brotherly arrangement. But it's not the normal way of doing business. We negotiate where it is impractical to go out on an open tender or to source quotations. You could have cases of continuity where you had a service provider providing a particular service, and it makes sense for continuation purposes to negotiate with the same service provider to finalize. You can have a situation where the client department, because they hold the budgets for their accommodation, the size of the building or the nature of the request is such that you can only negotiate with a certain landlord. And negotiated does not mean just one. You can negotiate with quite a number of the service providers. And it's not your first priority. It's done under circumstances where it's impractical to go out on open tender. The criteria used to appoint the head of the compliance unit, it is very clear. You need somebody who understands risk management. You need somebody who understands internal controls, PFMA. You can't check compliance matters if you don't even understand what are the things that must be complied with. So the criteria is very clear that this person must be able to understand the environment of internal controls, risk management, compliance, and be able to understand the different legislations that will inform the work that we do in the department.
Madam Chair, thank you for the second opportunity. I want to come back to the matter of disclosure of financial interests. And the answer was that, yeah, they're very aware of it and they're encouraging people. My question has not been answered, so I'll repeat the question. And I'll remind you, I'll just read here from the Public Service Commissioner, the chairperson. He said that he sent a letter to remind the executive authorities of the obligation to submit copies of the disclosure forms to the PSC by the due date. The executive authorities were also advised that where they had not received disclosure forms from a designated official by due date, they should charge such official with misconduct for not complying with the financial disclosure framework in terms of the disciplinary code of procedures as contained in the SMS handbook. Now, last year, by due date, no official, no senior manager in the public works have actually complied. Now, I want to know whether the recommendation by the chairperson of the Public Service Commission that actually been complied with, whether it was executed, and whether any officials have been charged with misconduct for not complying with the financial disclosure framework.
Thank you, Chair. On the matter of disclosure forms, the departments are having challenge of submitting late. But if you can see the report on page 21, they have public works 92% of the form submitted. So the only thing is that you must stress that you submit your report on the due date, not late. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Nyakemb.
Thank you very much. We are hungry for the budget speech. When I was listening, most of the time when reference is made to an accounting officer, it's also, I mean, it's usually meant that you are referring to number one official in a department. And most of the time, the number one official in the department is the director general. When I was listening to the introduction of public works delegation, I never heard of a director general or even an acting director general. So the point that I'm trying to make here, Chairperson, is that some of the questions which were were taken from the Public Service Commission report. Issues of officials who have not submitted before or on the due date, they must be disciplined, and that's what the chairperson of the Public Service Commission said, and all those things. I think you must take that and relate that to the Director General, if you have the Director General or the Acting Director General or even the Minister for that matter. It's unfortunate that is questions that at least do have content. But however, sometimes a question might have a content, but the correct person to respond to that question, if that person is not available, it becomes difficult. So I was trying to assist my colleague that she mustn't expect a response now in relation to disciplinary actions taken and everything else, because there are people who have certain responsibilities that not have. So, we are hungry. We are hungry. Hungry for the budget speech. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Members. And thank you to Mam Lydia. Mam Lydia, the Department of Public Works can submit the answers to the questions that you were not able to give us here. You can submit it in a written form. Because really some are not of your, they are above you, yourself. So you won't be able to answer them. And I would like to thank you for your presentation. And we will see you next year. For the improvement, to check on the improvement.